This is Colourful Radio.
Billy Paul live. Billy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How's it going, Billy?
Everything's going great, man. God's been good.
God bless you, sir. God bless you, sir. How's things over there in the sunny US? I suspect it's sunny where you are.
It's a nice day today, you know.
Okay, well, we're glad to have you at Colourful, and thanks for taking the time out to speak to us. And I know it's all about the film, your new film you've just released.
Yes, Am I Black Enough?
Am I Black Enough? Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen the film. I watched it, and I thought it was very, very informative, and I thought it was a great film. Very much enjoyed it. So congratulations, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed the opening line when you come out and saying, I don't sing for free.
You know, that was like a private joke. Somebody had sent me that on the internet, and that was a private joke, and me and the band, back on tour, we get on the bus or something, and we just sing, I don't sing for free.
Because that must take you back to the early days when you started out in the Sahara Club, when people were asking, doing the thing there.
Say that again?
When you started out in the early days in South Philly at the Sahara Club, tell us a bit about the beginning.
Oh, well, at the beginning, I was singing like jazz.
Okay.
You know, and that's where Kenny Gamble came and got me at.
Right.
You know, when he asked me would I join the record company, because I was singing like a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with a jazz trio.
Okay.
You know, because I'm a jazz singer.
Yep.
And I had produced this album of all the material that I used on the weekend in 3.5 hours, me and my wife. And what we did, you know, like starting the record company, mm-hmm. I presented that album to him, and it's called Feeling Good at the Cadillac.
But not many people know this, but I found out that you actually were temporarily a Blue Note.
Yes, I was, yeah. Damn. But I didn't want to dance, so how I'm Melvin Sargent.
They didn't want you to do the doo-wops and the skit and all the dancing moves.
Yeah, I couldn't do all the spinning and everything, you know.
Oh, good, good.
All the choreography, you know what I mean? Choreography, you know. And he used to laugh about it before he died, you know. We used to laugh about it. He would get on stage and tell people that when we worked together, you know.
Well, for those listening that don't realize that Gamble and Huff, the partnership, released over 100 albums on the Philadelphia record label. 25 were gold, 5 were platinum, and they sold over 100 million records. But Clive Davis, who was instrumental in that, says he thinks Me and Mrs. Jones was the record from that era, the biggest record they ever sold.
Yes, and I'm happy about that, you know, because I bought them their first Grammy.
So tell me about Me and Mrs. Jones. How did it come about?
Well, you know, Kenny had his idea about it, you know, like when it came about, when it was like the last song to go on the 360 Degrees album. And Kenny, like, you know, like it was more like a filler. I wouldn't say filler, but I'm saying going on the album. And when I first heard it, you know, I said, I don't know. Then I went down to St. Thomas, you know, stayed down there a week, me and my wife. And then I added to it, Me and Mrs. Jones.
That was the hook.
I couldn't need a hook. And that was the hook.
That was the hook.
Yes.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. But I mean, that was 1972. And everybody wants to know, who was there a real Mrs. Jones? But you say that Muhammad Ali introduced you to a Mrs. Jones in the film. Is that correct?
We went through a little family thing about it, you know. But I never get into it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we all got it right.
You talk about your wife, Blanche, and I know she's been there since, 1965. And in the film, you say that, or Blanche says, when she first met you, you said to her, she talks like a white girl.
Me and my wife are the best of friends. You know, like, I love her to death. She's my co-manager, along with Beverly Gay. And she's been with me on my ups and downs, you know, me. And, you know, like,
Well, it all came out in the film. Yeah, that all came out in the film, that you two are a real partnership. And I think some of the things you actually said when you first met opened my eyes a bit. And I thought, hang on, is that the kind of chat-up lines you used in them days about, you know, she's frigid, etc.? I thought, come on, Blanche. She had to stand a corner.
Hey, you're doing something right. We've been together 42 years.
Exactly. Now, that is a fantastic achievement. Congratulations to you both on that. That's fantastic.
Thank you very much, because I'm honored to be your husband.
Yeah, I mean, that must be great. Can I come back to just a couple of things, talking about your moving from Georgia? I know you had a real traumatic experience with your grandmother and the Klan and stuff, and your relocation up to Philadelphia. How much was that on you?
I was born in Philadelphia, but that's how she had 7 kids. She had to leave her land in the middle of the night and come up on the train, Albany, Georgia, to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And she always taught me, she would tell me a story. She always taught me that, you know, like, whatever you're going to do, you do it well, you know. But I come out to church and she wanted me to sing religious music. But her thing was this year, you can sing what you want, but you got to, like, get your education first, you know. And be proud of who you are, proud as a black man. Never look down at the ground, look up.
Exactly. And I think one of the things, that you said, she said, one of the things she used to say was, not important to be important, but important to be nice. And I found that very, very great. I found it was a fantastic line.
And that's what I've projected all through the years, you know. Like the little demons inside of me, you know, and I never tried to make them go and put them on other people, you know. I am, I felt very relieved during the movie because a lot of things came out that I had been suppressing for a long time.
Yeah, it came across that way. There was a lot of things in the film, for those of you who need to go and see this film. It is an excellent film, but it came out about your lifestyle and everything that had an influence on you. But one of the key things I found, the actual title itself was quite controversial, from what I gathered, between yourself and Kenny Gamble about the actual track itself, Am I Black Enough? Can you tell us more about that?
Well, you know, well, we had our differences because of the fact I thought it was like a bad record to come out right after a Monsters, a massive hit like me and Mr. Jones, you know. And but up until today, you know, I want people to know that me and Kenny Gamble are still the best of friends. You know, we still do a lot of work together, you know. But I think I got close to him. He always accepted me because of my honesty, you know, like, because he was the president of the record company.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would speak what's on my mind. And he gave me a certain amount of freedom, you know what I'm saying? He gave me a certain amount of freedom, you know, like, you want to see this song, Paul? I got this song, see if you like it, you know. But he, to this day, we're him a good friend, you know. I still do publicity things with him, you know. So I don't want people to think that me and Kenny Gamble are going to be friends forever.
As I said, I think that the Sound of Philadelphia itself is iconic alone, and Gamble and Huff were an instrumental along with Clive Davis in that. So, you know, we appreciate the honesty, but you always have to be honest in certain scenarios, haven't you, with yourself? And it's glad to hear that you both can get along and things have moved on, which is great.
Things have moved on. You know, matter of fact, we just did a thing for Soul Train. Gonna be showing in October. And getting ready to put out an album called Stuff in the Can called Unreleased. So we still got some little work we got to do.
I mean, talking of the work you've got to do, people need to understand the importance that you have played in the music industry for black music and some of the rewards. You've received Grammy Awards, Ebby Awards, NAACP Image Awards, you know, proclamations all over the US because of what you've done for the music industry. And one thing that I picked up from the film and other areas as well is that everybody used to focus on the civil rights movement and the part that musically Stevie Wonder played and Marvin played, but Questlove from The Roots has endorsed and said that he felt your music was just as inspirational.
My music fitted my environment, what I was in, you know, doing civil rights, you know, doing walking with Martin Luther King, you know, going to Selma, Alabama, Jesse Jackson. So I lived the life and I lived the music and I added the music with it.
Right.
You know?
I heard that you're in the UK in January of this year.
Yeah, I'll be there in October.
Oh, you come October? Great news.
I'll be there for 2 weeks.
Okay, well, you got to come and see us when you reach, you know that.
Oh, yeah, well, you're here to publicity because you'll definitely be there.
So tell me also the follow-up, The War of the Gods. Now, this is something which has been on the, you know, not many people who don't know you don't understand. This record, for me, was a very important record. Tell us a bit more about that one.
Well, you know, like me and Marvin became such enormous friends. I mean, like, he was my brother, man. We were very, very close. And when he did What's Going On, you know, that was his spiritual out, you know, because he said all the things that he wanted to say the world, to the brothers, people, white and black. And my spiritual album was War to God, which is my favorite album.
Right.
In my section. I was telling, touching the base with God, religion, you know, with humanity, demand, love, honest, open-mindedness, and the willingness to get along.
Brilliant.
Peace in the world. That was my spiritual album. I think it just had come from Mrs. Jones during the War to God. It was so fit. It was the real Billy Paul.
Right. Yeah, I mean, as I said, it, for me, it's an iconic. If people's not got the album, I should go out and listen to it because it is iconic, and it's something that is maybe before I would think before its time. Because if you listen to it now, it's so
like,
applicable.
It's almost like Am I Black Enough was before its time.
Yeah, I was about to ask that. Yeah.
Now Am I Black Enough is more received by white people than black. You know?
Ain't that a thing?
And now it's real funny, and now it's very popular. Yeah, Am I Black Enough? You understand? Because I wasn't attacking the white people or something when I was singing that song. I was talking to black people, telling them to get up one by one. They ain't gonna stop until the work is done. Because Martin Luther King was out there working, so we have to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep, definitely.
Telling them, you know, to black people to rise above, you know, rise up, get your education, you know.
Well, all that is definitely on the agenda for us over here in the UK as well. You know, we're trying to drive that message through to the youth. You know, education is key. You know, all the gang culture is nothing without, you know, education's key. And we need strong role models.
What I try to tell young kids is that, you know, get your education, you know. The computer can't do it all. You got to use your mind. Computer can't be your mind.
Well, as Obama says, yes, we can.
Yes, we can. That's it.
Definitely.
And I tell all young kids, yes, we can.
One thing I'd like to ask of you about is your influences. And I understand Billie Holiday is a key influence in you.
Yes, she is. I'm one of the only entertainers that got permission from her family to do it. The gravestone is very private. Nobody goes there.
Right.
And they gave me permission. I was honored to go there and place that orchid on her grave.
Yeah.
You know? So I felt very, very special doing that. You know?
It looked like a very emotional moment, yeah.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do it. And if you notice in the film, everything just got so quiet.
Yeah.
My mother's buried right next to her.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was, as I said, in, you know, the way it's portrayed in the film, it is excellent. It's a fantastic moment of the film for me.
Yes, it spoke a lot about my life, spoke a lot about Billy Paul, the things that Billy Paul and what Nick did up for a long time.
And what came out of the film for me as well was the, as you've already mentioned, the extraordinary relationship with Blanche. Blanche has been your rock, and the two of you seem to get on so well.
Yes, we do. You know, we talk to each other. We don't go to bed angry. If we have a disagreement, we don't go to bed angry. You know, we try to solve it before we go to bed. A lot of things can happen in the middle of the night.
Through thick and thin, as they say.
Because that happened in my family. I had an uncle that got mad with his brother. His brother died. He didn't have a chance to apologize, and he became a total alcoholic. You know.
Right. Billy, just to sort of round up, thanks for your time again. It's been great talking to you, but just get back to the film. It's due for release over here on July the 3rd. Now, what was your inspiration? You said, tell us a bit more about your what you want to get out of the film and how you want people to look at the film.
I want people to look at the film like seeing the real Billy Paul, things that I've suffered, you know, things that I've went through that they also can do it. I was able to with a lot of my life that I've been buried inside, you know, and that happened with being free with the film crew, letting them film me sometime, and I didn't even know they was around, you know what I mean? I felt very comfortable because I was honest about that made part of the film. I was my honest.
Well, that's great. That's fantastic. Now, one thing I need to ask you personally, Billy, tell me about the hats. What's this with Billy Paul and hats?
I love hats.
What's this with the hats?
Paul, I love hats. I always reported with a hat, because I always had luck with the record when I recorded with a hat. And it's funny, matter of fact, when you called, I was walking around the house with the phone in my hand waiting for you, because I'm looking for a cat that I had and I can't find it.
I see sombreros.
And I've been in every room in the house.
Listen, Billy Paul, it has been an utmost pleasure to have you here on the line at Colourful. I wish you everything for the future that's good. God bless you. And when you get over here, make sure you come and look for us at Colourful Radio.
Oh, thank you very much, Lewis. And God bless. And God bless Andy.
Bless you, Blanche, and all the family, man. Sounds of the Billy Paul there again, as I said. What a great man he is. And as I said, if you haven't seen him, look at his hats. He wears all these various hats. I've never seen a man in it. He's got a hat for everything. But please do make sure you check out the film. It's called Am I Black Enough? It's going to be out on the 3rd of July on Verve. And Keep locked in here at Colourful Radio for more information. We'll keep you updated on that. But believe you me, it's worth watching. As we go back, I'm going to play it again because I think Me and Mrs. Jones is an iconic tune. One we could all learn from.
This is Colourful Radio.